Welcome to the Matt Hummer Podcast, episode 17. I'm Mo, I'm here with Luke and Elle. How are you doing, guys? I'm back.
Yay!
Oh, that's a nice reaction. Thanks very much.
Yeah, boo.
Had a little break on the lovely sunny beaches of Spain last week. Had a lovely time. Podcast was wonderful last week. You did admirably.
Why, thank you.
Thanks very much for helping the thought. Oh, haven't lost it, guys. We are very, very excited this week because we have just announced that none other than the man himself, the Prince of fucking Darkness, Mr. Ozzy Osbourne, will be coming to the Mount Hummer Golden God Awards on Monday, June 11th, to pick up the Golden God Award itself. How about that?
That's pretty crazy.
Ozzy's coming mental, to the Golden Gods.
That's mental.
First time
What's
ever.
Happen?
Who knows? Who
Anything
knows?
Anything could happen.
It's going to be ridiculous. Also announced Baroness are playing this week as well.
Yeah.
They're joining the previously announced Meshuggah and Carpenter Brute and Merc here. It's an absolutely stacked lineup. And now we do have, I think it's probably safe to say, the single biggest name in the history of heavy metal itself joining us on the night as well.
Literally,
it's hard to
the
think
biggest.
Of bigger, yeah.
It's going to be ridiculous. So if you want to come and hang out with Ozzy, not really. He's going to be on stage, but it's going to be amazing to hear anyway.
It's unlikely he'll be hanging
he'll
out.
He'll be in the same room.
We won't even get to hang out with him, so, you know. But yeah, if you want to see Ozzy in the flesh alongside with all those very special bands mentioned, along with the headline. We haven't even announced the actual headliners of the show yet. That's how stacked this show is.
Yeah, I know. It gets announced on Friday.
Yeah, so tomorrow, once this podcast goes out, Friday, June 1st, we'll be announcing the headliner of the show. And if you want to see them, and they're very, very good, believe us, along with all those other bands and Ozzy Osbourne himself, get onto metalhammer.com right now to find out how you can get tickets to join us at the Golden Gods. It's going to be the biggest party of the summer. It's going to be freaking amazing.
God, it's the summer. It's terrifying that it's the summer.
Doesn't seem like it right now, does it? Because it's been pissing it down again. But it is the summer and it's going to rule. So come join us. Also, as the guys announced last week, we have the current issue of Metal Hammer on sale right now. It's an Avenged Sevenfold spectacular featuring a ton of free stuff, including the first ever tribute to Avenged Sevenfold cover CD, the likes of Fuzzy, Shapes, Betraying the Martyrs, Upon a Burning Body. God, there's loads on there. Some of the very, very best bands in modern metal today covering some Avenged classics. You can only get it with this issue. It's in shops right now. So get out there and get on it. What have you guys been up to? Well, I was sunning myself.
Yeah, sunning yourself. I was standing
lazy.
I was standing in a dark room in North London.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, as I usually
it's do. It's a bit of a pastime for you now, isn't it? Yeah,
tends to be. I was at the Black Heart watching two of the best new bands of the year. I guess not. Like,
fair to say.
I'd say Svalbard were headlining, although they're not necessarily a new band, on their album release show, I guess. It was released the day after the It's Hard to Have Hope album, which is probably the most blunt metal album of the year, if nothing else.
Fair. It's
just like, here's what's wrong with the world, fuck you in your stupid face. and it was great. I'll go into them in a minute, but before then was Mull, who we have spoken about, I think, before, like the Danish shoegaze black metal type band. And it's fucking ridiculous.
Another excellent young man.
It was their first ever UK show. And it was,
oh, really?
Yeah, and it was ridiculous how good they were. Like, wow. You watch them, it's just like, how are you that good already? And I'll just say, their debut album came out this year, and a large part of that room knew all the words to everything they were doing. And it was, you know, fucking crazy in there. And then it got really sweaty, and Svalbard came on, and yeah, just did like, to be fair, not as long as I wanted them to do.
Oh, really?
About 40 minutes of just like,
they probably haven't got a ton of material to play.
Not really, like they say two albums, friends. Yeah, but it was still like 40 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes of just like, blistering black and hardcore with, you know, post-metal bits and whatever thrown
performed by Animal from the Muppets.
Yeah. and it was genuinely fucking brilliant.
Awesome.
You should check both of those bands out. And then I went to go stand in the
on the other side of this, of the
on
coin.
The other side, I went to go stand in the sunshine in a field. I went to Slam Dunk Festival on Sunday, which I'm a big fan of. And it was
first time they've moved it to a field. Is that right? Or in Hatfield?
Hatfield. Instead of being at the uni, it's now across the road from the station, which is good. And in a field, or in like a nice little park area. Yeah, it's good. And it's like a proper little festival. There's like two outdoor stages, a load of marquee tents. You know, it's just really, really nice. Saw some great bands, did I see? Creeper were good, not great, admittedly, because the sound was really not on their side.
Okay.
It was real, real shame.
What was the buzz like around Creeper? Because at the top of last year, they were, it felt like they were going to be the band everyone was talking about, and the album was really good and everyone was very excited. And then it kind of felt like, even though obviously from a very different part of the scene, or for the most part, Code Orange kind of came along and just swept everybody away
with being
the hype band. So was there still a lot of buzz around Creeper coming out? I mean, I know they're at the end of their album cycle now, but
no one was really talking about them in terms of like band of the day, but in terms of like the crowd they gathered, it was still decent. It was just weird that they were playing middle of the day, considering the amount of hype that was around them last year. You'd figure they'd be a bit further up.
Sure.
But there's still tall people wearing, you know, Callous Heart back patches and stuff. They're still a strong fan there. But I know what you mean. It did feel like they were about to go, you know, stratospheric, and then something seemed to have, you know, cut them off. But to be fair, I didn't spend much at the main stage. I was in the designated heavy stage for the day, really, in the Impericon stage, watching Every Time I Die and Comeback Kid. And Loathe are fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Loathe.
Yeah.
God and God nominated, yeah, no less.
So I'd never really given them time of day, to be honest. But I sort of saw a lot of people hyping them and thought, oh, are they really that good? And it was, yeah, really, like, first band on, everyone was going mental for it. Like, big, you know, hardcore dancing pit and whatever. But the got one album, have they? And everyone seemed...
No, it's more than one.
Oh, is
it? I think they might have a couple of albums, but I think the new one was the first on Nuclear Blast.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because there's a seriously dedicated fan base there, and they were going hard for it. But obviously, Every Time I Die were the greatest bands of the week, of the weekend. Probably the weekend. I didn't go to the 2 days, but I'm sure they were. And because they're fucking brilliant. Yeah. They're so, so good.
Just don't do bad shows. No. Don't even do less than a brilliant show.
No, exactly. And to be fair, like, I really Hatfield... The new Hatfield site's brilliant. I really, really like it. It's way better than the uni one, and it feels like a proper little festival.
I was going to say, it's interesting because in such a crowded market, it's fair fucks to them for making... I'm not saying it's a risky thing to do. Well, it is in this weather anyway, but in Britain. But it's outdoor festivals, there's a lot of them, and for them to kind of take that leap into becoming part of that scene, whereas Slam Dunk always felt something a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah.
And so for them to pull it off is quite a cool achievement.
Because the Leeds one, I think, is outdoors now as well, or Bits Fit is outdoors now. I think they take over like the city centre.
They do, yeah, yeah.
And I think the Birmingham one's still pretty much indoors. But yeah, it just shows that scene's still growing, I guess, that they've had to actually move to an entirely new site and restructure the way the festival works. Like, fair play.
Wow, yeah. Exciting times. And speaking of which, segue, we're just a little bit excited about this because Iron Maiden are officially back on tour.
Woo!
And they are packing... I really thought about saying this because I know it's easy to get lost in hyperbole with bands like Maiden. They are my favourite band, so I'm always going to be excited about them. But I genuinely think they might be packing the greatest set list they've ever put together. We're not going to go into it specifically on this podcast now because a lot of people probably don't want to see it yet. They're going to try and wait until they see him and all the rest of it. But they are. It's one of the most varied set lists ever. They are picking songs that I never thought I would get to see them play again. They're playing songs that I never thought I'd get to see them play at all. There's stuff from the 80s that they haven't played since then. There's stuff from other eras of the bands that they've brought back. I'm trying not to spoil it too much for myself for reasons which I'll explain later on. But it seems like the show is off the scale as well.
The pictures I've seen going around the internet of the show, they seem to tweet a different picture for every song they're playing.
They did, yeah.
On the show.
They revealed the set list as it was happening, which was quite cool.
And revealed the sort of how the stage changes for every song almost, it looks like. And yet it looks like there's serious money and serious imagination that's been thrown into this.
I can't wait. I mean, they're the greatest band of all time as it is, but I think, you know, I think if you follow Maiden on any level, you kind of know they tend to do an album cycle where they play a lot of the new record, then they'll kind of do maybe a festival run after that where they do a few new songs and switch up the set list a bit. And then they tend to come back with like a general greatest hit set, or they'll do like an early era set, something like that. And this one, I think it's called the Legacy of the Beast Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of based around the game. And obviously you kind of look at that and you think, you know, it's kind of... feels maybe a bit cynical and they're just doing it to play the game, and it'll just be kind of... there's no such thing as a bad Iron Maiden set, but it might just be what you'd expect, the classics kind of rolled out again and all that, but it isn't that at all. And it looks like they're doing stuff like you said on stage which they have never done before, and my god, I can't wait.
I'm very excited. I'm hopefully going to the Birmingham one because London clashes with Bloodstock, but I don't want to miss this.
Judas Priest and Iron Maiden both play in England on the same day. It's a brutal, brutal choice to make. Oh my word. But yeah, lots going on. What else is going on, Al, in the world of metal?
Well, Jeremy Jordison and Wednesday 13 have met up for the first time in 7 years, I think.
Yep.
So maybe a Murder Dolls reunion is happening.
Yes!
Basically, Luke's favourite band.
I fucking love Murder Dolls.
You love Murder Dolls?
I genuinely love Murder Dolls.
Where do you sit on Murder Dolls?
I think they're alright. I mean, I saw them like a really long time ago.
I'm quite surprised you don't like them more, I've got to say.
I think I like the aesthetics and the idea of them more than I actually like them in reality. Because I like dark stuff and fun stuff. So.
It's L.
Yeah. So I saw them at Download in 2003, which is basically 1,000 years ago. And it was...
Give or take.
It was a good time. I remember them coming on and it was quite buzzy because they were still new and everyone was very excited. And it's really weird. I had a little look at the lineup. I was reminiscing... And there are so many bands from the day they played that aren't around anymore. There was Amen, Funeral for a Friend, Stamping Ground, Shadows Fall.
Wow.
So it's like going
Shadows
back to the
Shadows Fall's still going, aren't they?
They kind of went on a hiatus. Okay. So they've not been active the past like 5 years, but they've not like technically broken up. But yeah, it seems like it's almost like they're from a different time. It's sort of a blast from the past type thing. So
kind of post new metal era.
Yeah, exactly. It was, but new metal was still massive when they were a thing, but they were new metal, so, but yeah, they kind of skirted around that ripped, tight, stripy socks vibe. So I'm kind of curious to see what they'll do if they come back.
Luke looks like he's gagging to say what he thinks
about
it. Update it, or whether they'll do something else. I don't know.
Yeah, good point. Well, they did come back in the mid-noughties, didn't they? Or was it kind of like more like near 2000?
Yeah, they had another record after that Download appearance.
Because they went away for a bit, and then they came back again, and when they came back, they looked a bit more grown up, like... excuse me, grown up. still kind of horror schlocky, but more like Leatherface than stripey
socks.
Yeah,
they had two records, didn't they?
Yeah. Women and Children last, I think, was the last one.
They played down. You remember when they did that Ozfest at the O2? Well, it might have been at Wembley. They did an Ozfest at an arena, and it was like Ozzy, Skindred, I think still Panther played.
Fucking hell.
Korn played. And yeah, Murder Dolls played that, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, I saw them. I only seen them once, and that was at Rock City in, it must have been 2011, whenever Women and Children last came out. I think it was then. Supported by Black Veil Brides, which I think was the
weirdest. Oh, I remember that tour.
I
remember that tour.
Because Defiled were on first.
Yeah.
And it was literally like someone booked the bands based on appearance.
It really was. It really was. Wow.
None of them sound like each other.
But I remember seeing them, like, when Black Veil Brides were on, all the Murder Doll fans were stood at the back judging, and then as soon as Black Veil Brides finished, it's like the crowds just swapped, like all the Murder Doll fans went to the front, and all Black Veil Brides fans stood at the back. And yeah,
I'm not a massive Black Veil Brides fan, but I don't think you can be too judgmental if you're repping for Murder Dolls and go, oh no, that's stupid.
Yeah,
and do you know what I mean? Like
Murder Dolls aren't they're not the most musically accomplished band. Like it's just basically horror punk, whatever they call themselves. You know, and. But the songs are fun. The first album
still slams. You forget how many great songs are on that.
I love every song on that record. And if they did a festival set, if they just came out in 45 minutes, it'd be fucking brilliant.
I think you got it right with the fun, though, because Black Veil Brides, whether you're on the yes or the no side of them, they're not particularly fun. They're more serious, aren't they? Like, even if you thought they were funny because you didn't take them seriously, it's not like they're a fun band. Their songs are more kind of... rocky and like about personal things.
Yeah, this was
Murder Dolls are, like you said, they're just more fun. You can get a bit more involved.
I remember it's the only time I've really seen Black Veil Brides. It was when they were still doing the whole Motley Crue big hair thing, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was Andy Biss that was there with no top on, sticking his hand down his pants, and I'm just like, oh, I'm at a Murder Dolls show.
He's there in his stripy tights. I didn't come for this. This is silly.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Do I love to say fuck? That non-silly song.
I love that song so much.
No, it's good.
Wow. Well, what else is going on in the world of 2002?
Well, but sticking with the new metal vibe, Korn, it looks like, are working on the next record. Or at least Monkey
I'm so
and
excited.
Head
excited.
Yeah. Yeah. Elle loved that last album.
I loved it so much.
It was really good.
I still listen to it now. I mean, I know it's only a couple of years ago, but I still like to go back and listen to that record all the time. Like, I'm not one of those people when it comes to Korn that
the serenity
is like, oh,
of
I must go and listen to, you know, well, I love Issues, but you know what I mean. I don't have to go back into their back catalogue all the time.
Mm. No, no, I really like the new stuff. I probably don't like it quite as much as you, but to me, I think Korn have become that band where they put a new album out every 2 years, and there seems to be two or three really strong songs on each one.
The
and
last
I'm fine
one,
with
every
that.
Song was good on the last record.
Yeah,
every song.
Some were better than others.
No,
I think the Corey track was a bit of a.
I enjoyed that. I know you didn't like it, but I like it.
What was the lead single?
Suffering. No. Oh God, I can only think of the first song on the album, which is insane.
No, it wasn't that one. But whatever it was, the main single, I think,
please. Rotting in Vain.
That was it. Rotting in Vain. Yeah. That's a wicked joke. When they played that at Wembley, that went off, and that was great to see.
Yeah.
Oh, and Black Is the Soul. Remember how good that is?
That's a good song as well. It is. Well, yeah. I mean, always good to hear from Korn. And as far as kind of their 21st century output goes, I'm quite a big fan of that. When they toured with Biscuit, which is that Wembley show that you were talking about, they did a ton of post-2000 stuff. And I was loving it, but I think because so many people came for Biscuit as well, it didn't really please the casual fans as much. But I love Korn's modern stuff. I think they're great.
Yeah, I think they're wicked. I mean, like you say, they're just a solid metal band now that, you know, have sort of grown away from their new metal roots to an extent. Oh, just that solid, like, yep, here's another new album. It's great. We'll do a tour.
And the last 5 years has been the best I've ever seen them. And I've been seeing them since Untouchables.
Well, Jonathan's obviously just doing a solo record right now, which is pretty different. It's got all the world music influences on it, so it's probably going to get that out of his system.
I was going to say, I'm quite relieved because, I think the album's all right, but I think more to the point, that's a lot of stuff that I probably wouldn't want to hear on a Korn album.
Yeah, I like it in a Jonathan Davis record. Yeah. I think this is interesting and I've got time for this, but on a Korn record, I want it to slam a bit harder.
Right, so we're going to go straight into some reader questions now. Ben Wilmot asks, I saw you, that's you, Elle. gave the new Ghost album 9 out of 10 in the latest issue of Metal Hammer. Damn right, it's a fucking modern classic in mine, and I think it's safe to say Elle's opinion. What are you saying, Luke? The new Ghost album?
Yes, great.
Probably not quite as frothing as I've been recently.
No, I've listened to it a lot, Elle's. But yeah, I think you two have been bouncing a lot higher than I have.
Definitely.
Have you enjoyed my singing, Luke?
I've thoroughly enjoyed your singing.
There have been some serious sing-alongs in the Metal Hammer office, I can tell you that right now. So Ben says, saw you get the new album, 9 out of 10. How high is it on your best albums of the year so far? And how big could Ghost get by the end of this album cycle? Architects, for instance, managed a well-sold Academy run, and with a new song got to Ali Pali, could Ghost manage that too? Yes.
I agree.
I think so. I mean, Ghost were doing... I think Ghost headline, technically speaking, headlined Brixton before Architects did, didn't they? Because they had Brixton on that Jaeger tour.
Was that the Jaeger tour? Yeah, fuck.
Which may have been like a £5 ticket.
Yeah,
so it's quite different. Yeah. But they supported Alice in Chains at Ali Pali as well, didn't they, that time?
That's
good. Wow.
So they've already kind of quite successfully filled some quite big venues, guys.
And they headlined Bloodstock last year.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, the biggest thing they've done so far. They headlined the UK's biggest like proper heavy metal festival. So I think whereas Architects have kind of been up and down and round and round and been through some horrible shit and had to bounce back and eventually got kind of back on the saddle career-wise, I think Ghost have just been on a constant incline. I can't see really where that's going to stop at this point, especially with how good this new album is and when everyone hears it tomorrow when it's out.
Is it tomorrow?
Yeah, it's tomorrow. So exciting.
It's going to blow people away, I think.
It does feel like, because of how carefully crafted and orchestrated the whole Ghost machine is and the story and everything else, if Papa or whoever it is what decides they want to do Ali Pali or whatever, no one's going to say no. It's just like, we're going to do that. Okay, of course you are.
I mean, when the last issue, the Ghost issue, when I talked to Tobias about it all, he specifically said, you know, he's only going to take Ghost to a point where he feels like it's fully fulfilling his vision for everything. You know, he's not going to put this new show that they've been taking around America into like small dingy venues. Like, he's only going to put it in places where he feels it does justice.
So, where have they been playing in America? Is that arenas?
Kind of like large Academy sizes.
Okay,
so like, you know, thousands rather than, you know, a couple of hundred or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, to go back to Ben's question, I fully fully believe that they have the capacity to finish this run on some massive shows. I don't see why they couldn't. There's nothing that they've done so far that makes you think, oh, they're going to lose it now.
They've been so strategic as well. Like, they didn't actually play any hometown shows. They didn't play the toilet circuit. They literally came straight to the UK and did, I think it was 2 or 3 shows here to go, look, we're Ghosts, look at us, and everyone went mental. And then they just carried on playing from there. So I think, like you said, Luke, if Papa or Cardinal Coppier or Tobias makes a decision to do that,
not the same person.
Papa. Tobias is Ghost. That's the line.
But yeah, I think Ghosts have the power to be one of the biggest bands in our world. In like 10 years' time, you'll look back and go, shit, remember when Ghosts were that small band doing?
Yeah,
releasing Prequel or whatever you pronounce it. Yeah, in 10 years' time, they could easily do the O2 or something.
There's no. It's hard to say, isn't it? Because you just never know what's going to happen. Like, no one, I know you guys last week said, no one, as brilliant as Avenged were when they came out, and Waking the Fallen is still my favourite thing they've ever done, for instance, no one would have pointed at them and instantly gone, yep, they're going to do 2 nights at the O2. Or, yeah. Well, didn't exist then, you know what I mean? Then they're going to do 40,000 people in London over a weekend. Yeah. You just wouldn't ever have thought that. But with Ghost, it's just, I think what makes them so exciting is that they're so unique. You can see what little parts of them are taken from little bits from around rock and roll and pop music as well and everything else, but you can't compare them to anything that's come before. Anything. Look at that Rats video and say, oh yeah, that's like, how many metal bands have done anything like that? It's ridiculous.
It's so well polished as well, the new record.
Yeah.
You know, obviously that has to be to your taste, but it's so well put together and well produced and well polished that to play it in small venues would seem weird. It is literally made for big venues.
Yeah. And I know that he's got, Tobias has got like 9 people on stage now doing stuff. Yeah, I mean, like you said, Al, it's a very polished record. I'll be really interested to see what the initial reaction to it is when it drops, because it is very polished. It's much, you know, some of that kind of low end has kind of been taken out of what they're doing now. So that might rub people a bit of a funny way to start with. But I think the songs on it are just so relentlessly good. You just can't fuck with them.
My first reaction was confusion.
Yeah,
mine
too.
My first reaction was, definitely, what the fuck is this? And then, yeah, they just, like you said, the songs are so good, they just burrow into your mind, and that's it.
We've had it for a couple of months now, because, you know, we've done the issue with them and everything else, and it's now got to the point where, you know, now that I think about it, I don't think I've played it for a couple of weeks now, and I know that when I play it again, when you go back to it, once you've had a little bit of time away from it, it feels like a great hits album already.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Like, it's that level of ridiculousness, and, yeah, I just think, I don't want to jinx it, but I can't see what they could do that would totally fuck their momentum at the moment.
Mm. I do just hope, you mentioned, you know, it's not as mildly terrible as Taste Forever, but you could easily see them, if they wanted to, leaving the metal world behind and going for a Glastonbury Coachella crowd.
True.
And just being a completely different entity in another album or two's time.
And what, like refusing to play metal places?
Yeah, yeah. They could easily be massive fans. Yeah, they could just be as big as they wanted to be. And they're not going to be as big as Queen by being a metal band.
Mm. That crossover is super hard, though, because, you know, all the fans...
Yeah, but those choruses are easy, Radio 1 friendly.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
the mentality, though, of like... metal's still separate from mainstream music, and it's that mentality of how do you introduce a whole new group of people to a band that still do have kind of satanic imagery and concepts as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's not forget that. It's not just kind of
hearts
and rainbows.
They definitely have big hooks, and they're definitely, I know what you mean, Luke, like they have the capacity for proper mainstream appeal. But I think even like the second single they released, Dance Macabre, that's one of the poppier songs on the album. That's still not the kind of thing I think you see anywhere in the mainstream at the moment.
No.
It's like that's 80s pure, influence.
Yeah,
as
like
well.
80s glam rock.
But that could be why it's kind of ripe for the picking almost. It's like, this is something that doesn't exist anywhere. Why should it just be metal's little thing?
Yeah, true. Very true. Very true. I'm always like, I want metal bands to be as big as they can possibly be.
Yeah, yeah,
because
exactly.
I've seen benefits from it. But I think it'll take a lot for Ghost to not rely on metal's wider you know, support.
I would love to get to a point where Cardinal Cobia is being interviewed on BBC News. That's all I want.
That would be amazing. Yeah, we'll never know. We'll see. We'll see. Right, enough of ghosts. What else is going on? What are people asking of us today?
Zane Hall asks, what three metal albums got you into the genre?
Gone in.
Am I answering?
Well, we're all answering.
He's asking you.
My three albums are Hybrid Theory.
Yes.
Issues. And Chocolate Starfish.
Cool. Do you want to talk about any of those? Metal. Shit, two of those. Well, one of those is definitely mine as well.
Well, probably, I'll go with Issues to start with. I think it was like, one of my friends at school had an actual cassette tape. And we would listen
to
an actual cassette tape. And I kind of
ask
like,
your dad, kids.
Yeah.
And you don't listen anyway.
We would listen to that. And I was like, wow, what's this music? This is pretty cool. And it kind of around the same time, just sort of seeing what was happening. And one of my friends as well was buying music magazines and I was reading those. And Issues really pulled me in because it was so different and dark. And then Hybrid Theory was just like the record. It was just every single song I just loved, and it was that perfect mix of pop and new metal that really hooked me in, and I would literally just play it on repeat over and over and over and over and over again forever. And then Chocolate Starfish, I knew that record was coming and I was super excited about it, and I remember I was off sick from school and my dad bought it for me, which was very nice of him to make me feel better. And I remember listening to it and just being like, yes, this is a thing. And
why did he buy it for
how
you?
I learned about metal. Because I really wanted it, because I was okay. I knew the record was coming, and I was
so off. You'd seen Rolling or something, or
yeah, I'd heard Rolling on the radio. I knew the record was out, and I was off school, ill, and he bought it for me. He brought it home from work because he knew I'd be feeling pathetic and ill, and I was so excited. I instantly got better.
Yeah.
Thanks, well, Fred. Durst.
My first proper metal album was Chocolate Starfish as well, actually, and this is why I have a special amount of credit to WWE, or F as it was at the time, because I was a huge fan, still am, and during the kind of end of the Attitude Era, The Undertaker, who's most famous as kind of like a dead man, super end of level boss goth gimmick, for a little while he had a biker gimmick called the American Badass, and for that, one of the theme tunes he had at the time was Rolling by Limp Bizkit, and I heard that and I was like, what the hell is that? It just felt at the time like nothing else I'd ever really heard before. I kind of was familiar with a lot of hip hop and stuff, but hearing it on top of those, like hearing rapping on top of those like Wes Borland riffs blew my little mind. So I went out and got Chocolate Starfish, and that's what started it all for me too. I still think it's the best metal party album ever written. Hybrid Theory was in there for me as well, but I think that kind of came a little bit after, and I was already all over nu metal at that point. I think the next...
Yeah, it was a little bit after, wasn't it?
I think they came out... I think it might have been out first. That... So, weirdly, two of mine came in the same month, because Hybrid Theory, Chocolate Starfish, and my next one, which is Hollywood by Marilyn Manson, all came out in October 2000. What a month that was. so, yeah, I barely really just started to touch upon nu metal, and then I don't think I got Hollywood when it came out, but it was a couple of months afterwards, and I was in a CD warehouse. Anyone remember those?
No,
even Luke doesn't remember those.
We just
we had MVC.
Well, if you know what, like, you know, there was it called Computer Exchange Store.
Oh, CEX. CX, yeah.
It's basically like that, but 15 years ago, whatever it was. God, I wish. Nearly 20, never mind. So I was in one of those and I saw the cover for Hollywood and I was very much into my, like, oh man, it's like religious but fucked up and like, oh cool, it's subversive and blah blah. Which it is. But especially to whatever I was, 14 year old. Took Hollywood home, put it on, and that was the album that took me from kind of just enjoying metal on a music level to like really appreciating music as art, and the depth of narrative and vision, the lyrics, the imagery inside the album sleeves. It was the first time I'd ever dipped into metal like that, or any kind of music, and it totally changed my perspective on what music could be. Still think it's the best Marilyn Manson album. It's a classic as well. My third one, I'd probably say Reroute to Remain by In Flames, because that's what pretty much got me into extreme music eventually. I know it's not it's kind of at the top end of it. In Flames are pretty much one of my all-time favourite metal bands as well. So that's a great album too. What's yours, Morten?
Very similar to both of yours, really, I guess.
Almost like we all came in through the same generation of bands or something.
Almost. So my hybrid theory, obviously, was a big one. I remember taping it, or I had a tape of it, should I say, and listened to it till it wore out and it didn't work anymore. And I thought it was really good, but it was missing. But then as soon as I heard Chocolate Starfish, I pretty much stopped listening to Hybrid Theory anymore.
Oh, really?
I was just like, he's swearing, this is amazing.
He said fuck.
Yeah, I know. Because I discovered Limp Bizkit through WWF, as it was at the time. But I remember hearing, obviously, Undertaker's theme, but it was my way being WrestleMania 17 theme tune. That I remember going into town to buy it on single. And they didn't have it. They had My Generation instead. So I bought that. And then like a week or 2 weeks later, Chocolate Starfish came out of the album, I think. And yeah, it was just... I made sure I got the parental advisory version.
Yeah!
Put all the swearing in there.
Screw you, the man.
Yeah. And I remember just hearing a hot dog for the first time and thinking, this is hilarious and awesome. Yes. And yeah, I just loved it. I bought myself a red cap. A red New York Yankees cap.
That's amazing.
Taking a rap from those critics.
I say I bought it. I got it for my birthday.
Nice. You went full new metal.
Oh yeah, dude. I looked amazing for about a day, and like those were obviously massive. But it was still not self-titled that was the big one for me. I remember seeing the Wait and Bleed video on MTV2. I think it was. Back then, and just what and just,
was
just,
that the because there were two versions, weren't there?
This was the live one,
that was the one I saw as well. Because it was like a kind of claymation one as well. At one point,
which I only ever saw on like a sort of bootleg VHS thing. But I remember my friend had like a VHS, like he taped all the cool new metal videos off MTV2, and we just watched that on repeat pretty much. And whenever Wait and Bleed came on, I thought this is the fucking coolest thing, and I just got a copy of the album. I can't remember. I think I bought it off him. I think he was like, "Oh, I don't want it anymore. It's not cool anymore." And yeah, but still, I sat off him and thought, "This is the greatest thing I've ever heard," and I never looked back.
And if on the off chance you've not listened to any of those albums we just mentioned, for fuck's sake, what are you doing?
Go back to the year 2001.
Very, 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 very good time indeed.
David J. Brown asks because I don't know whether he knows whether we or thinks we know this, the answer to this question, but will Metallica play Download next year?
Don't know.
I think there's a you've got to think there's a strong chance.
Remember the last time though? Was the last time for a while? Black Album.
Yeah, they've not done it since the new album came out. The last time they played it was before Self or Hardwired Self Destruct.
Yeah, and it was the By Request set, right?
No, that was Sonosphere, which was after. The Download was when they did the Black Album backwards.
Okay, yeah.
Which was their great set, but pointless bit of criticism for them there. That was a great set. I'd hope so. I mean, Metallica haven't brought the stadium show to Europe, because they brought a great show to Europe with all the screens and all the weird stuff they did, but... The show they had in the States on Hardwired with the big M and the A and all that mad shit on the screens and stuff, they haven't brought that over to Europe yet. So I would assume that's still coming at some point.
Oh, I hope so.
And it would be good if it was Download. I don't know if it was their own. They haven't done their own stadium show over here in must be a decade now. So
They could easily just do that whole a Metallica day in a stadium or a field somewhere.
Definitely.
Or like I say, if they turn up to Download next year, I'll be there.
Yep. Down for Metallica always. Plus, Hardwire was a really, really good album. Hooray. Robert Robinson asks, Atrivium is strong or stronger now than with Ascendancy? It's a very good question. We gushed over the album and the Hammer Tour, which they headlined. It was a real triumphant moment for them, I think, and for metal in general. I don't know. Where do you think this places them now compared to where they were in 2005?
Well, I was obsessed with Ascendancy and Trivium when that came out. I really, really, really loved it. And then every record they did since, there are a couple of songs I like, but I never really liked the whole record. But this one, Sin in the Sentence, I love the whole record, and it feels to me sort of like an Ascendancy style one. I suppose it's all pretty kind of easily accessible, I guess, and it's quite catchy, and I just think the Sin in the Sentence is great, and I haven't felt that excited about Trivium since Ascendancy. So to me, I'm kind of... It's cool because now when I go and see them, they're playing those new songs and the songs I like from the records in between. and stuff off Ascendancy. So to me, it's kind of a good thing to go and watch them now because I get all of that. Mm. But I never really felt like the other records lived up to my excitement, which may have been me personally, not them as a band.
Yeah, where do you think they are on kind of a wider level now? Because Ascendancy, they were the most exciting band in metal in terms of like, this is going to be the next big thing.
They've got to be stronger because they've been like all around the world and picked up loads of fans, yeah. And it's a different kind of hype, isn't it? At first it was the hype of this is something new, and they were really, really pushed, and we thought they were going to get like Metallica big, and then they kind of didn't. But I think Cylinder Sentence has stood them in really good stead for kind of playing those good sized venues.
It's weird because I remember when, same as you, Anna, like Ascendancy was my favourite thing, and probably says my favourite thing Trivium have ever done. And it did feel like when that came out, everyone was on board with Trivium. Like, if you liked metal, then you liked Trivium. That's pretty much the rule. And then it dropped off after that for whatever reason. But now it does feel like everyone, that it's okay to like Trivium again. That Trivium are suddenly a credible, not that they were never, you know, uncredible. But it seems like with the release of this album and the success of like every show they've done, like on the Hammer Tour and everything else, everyone came away going, Trivium are sick now. Like,
I mean, it's the first genuinely great album they've done in a while. Certainly yeah. Since In Waves. And I think it's better than In Waves. I think it's probably the best thing they've done since Shogun, personally. So it's kind of like, it's not like they've been consistently pumping out Ascendancy after Ascendancy. Like, they've had a bumpy ride. But yeah, you're right. Like, it feels like, I just think there's a whole lot of love for that band, and I think they fucking earned it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because they never
really
stopped.
They're
yeah.
really
yeah.
good showmen as well. When they played Brixton on the Hammer Tour, it was a really good show. And even if you don't really like Trivium, you couldn't watch that show and not think it was good. So all those intervening years they've used to build their craft, essentially, and get better and better and better. So even if the songs maybe didn't go down as well as the original hype and Ascendancy, they've really honed everything, so now they just come across as really strong. Whereas I think when they started and I saw some of those early shows, it felt like they were really being pushed, but they didn't maybe have the confidence to match up to it. They would get cranked up like louder than the headliners and stuff when I would go and see them, and it felt like it was almost trying to compensate for a lack of kind of natural presence. I think one of the shows was with Slipknot, and it was so loud, and it just came across as a bit insecure almost. I don't know who was responsible for that, but now they just come across with this easy confidence, and they can just do a show and do it so well.
I think it's really cool of them, how they've gone about doing it as well, because they had Ascendancy, then they had the Crusades, which was kind of a big blip because it was them trying to write arena rock for the sake of it. It didn't really work. Came back with Shogun, which is another classic album in my opinion, and then In Waves, which is great. They had all their momentum back, and then they do what I think Trivium always do, and I think I can't think of another band who have been more guilty of this. They overthink stuff. So after In Waves got them kind of back in the saddle properly, they suddenly went off and did an album with David Draiman, and it was like, to the extent where there's actually a couple of songs on there where Matt's kind of singing a little bit like this, and they're just like, okay, so what, this is to me, it felt like a really cynical attempt to kind of go America big, because they've never quite been as big as America as they have over here, which is stupid. America saw it out, but it felt like they kind of went with a big face in America who they felt could kind of put them on a platform. Then they went a whole different way and did like a power metal album, like a kind of, not power metal, but like a proper trad metal album, which some people liked, I think quite a few people didn't like. And it felt like they were kind of doing this thing of like, we're a metal band, we're going back to our roots. Sin in the Sentence to me really felt like Trivium just being Trivium and writing a fucking good Trivium album. And it is a great album. Like, every time I listen to it, I think this is almost my favourite thing they've ever done. And I really hope that whatever they do next, it's just harnessing that momentum and just doing what feels right for them. Not kind of doing, right, how do we take the next step? What's the next thing we should do to kind of capitalise or make the most of it, or take a cool left turn that's going to be experimental for the sake of it, or whatever. I hope they just keep on doing what they do, because what they're doing right now is fucking amazing. And I said it when I reviewed the Brixton show a few weeks back, but seeing them in Brixton was like seeing Machine Head on The Blackening. It felt like a real moment for that band.
Yeah. More of the same, please.
Yeah, more bangers. Chloe Collins asks, what's been metal's most embarrassing moment?
Crazy Town.
Oh, yeah, does that even count?
No. Do you think I quite like Butterfly?
Yeah, but they sort of lingered around too long.
Three minutes and 30 seconds.
No, yeah. After Crazy Town, they wouldn't go away.
Hold on, I don't think that counts as metal.
No.
I know we kind of adopted it because they look like a new metal band, but I don't think you could say metal's responsible for that. That's unfair.
Yeah, that doesn't make us look good.
Yeah.
So, what was the most embarrassing moment?
There's been some really embarrassing covers.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of, like, I wasn't a huge fan of Fred Durst's Behind Blue Eyes.
I didn't mind that at the time. Yeah, I think if I heard it now, I'd probably weep.
Behind Blue Eyes.
Thanks, man.
You can't really have a conversation about embarrassing metal moments, and I hate to be that guy because I'm not normally one of those keyboards. I hate Metallica types, but without mentioning Metallica, the Lou Reed album was pretty dire.
Yeah.
that's you know, it's been far enough now where you should be able to look at that and say, well, you're kind of waiting for people to come out and go, no, it's aged well, like people do with like Chinese Democracy and
all those
kind of things. But with Lulu, it's just like, nope, still bad.
Yeah.
I like how they stand by it though. They were like,
no, fair fucks.
We did it and we stand by it and we like it. So
absolutely,
fuck you all.
It was. Well, I guess the thing about that is that it wasn't actually Metallica that was the bad part of that. If they'd taken Lou Reed off it and just used some of those riffs and stuff, it would have been decent, but they didn't.
Yeah.
That wasn't the point of it, Merlin.
No. He still shouted, I am the table, like it meant anything other than
fair
being awkward and weird.
Fair point. But they did just...
I explained that lyric. I can't remember what it was, though, because it was based on the whole...
Well, I hope there's some explanation behind it. Otherwise, Hetfield's having a meltdown.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, as I kind of mentioned, they did, you know, Hardwire is the best thing they've done in 20 years at least. So they kind of, they had the last laugh, the stadium filling biggest band in the history of metal.
Yeah. There's nothing, it's like, there's been loads of embarrassing stuff. I just can't think of anything that's like really like, comes to mind. It's like, oh, can you believe that happened?
Again, this is not Metallica's fault, so it's not on them, but the whole Grammys thing with Lady Gaga was a shit show, wasn't it?
That was a shit show.
And that was not, that couldn't have been less Metallica's fault, but in terms of metal as a world being mugged off on an international stage, that was pretty frustrating.
Was that the same Grammys where they played Metallica over Megadeth?
I think that might have been a different one, but again.
Yeah.
Anytime metal is involved in the Grammys, it seems to go a bit south.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Boom.
One day. We've got the Golden Gods instead, though, just as good.
We do have the Golden Gods. What a wonderful way to end the podcast. As we said, Aussies turning up. We've got Baroness, Carpenter Brut, Miss Sugar and Mercury with a headliner announcement coming tomorrow, Friday, June 1st. It's big and they're bringing a hell of a show with them, I can tell you that now. Don't forget to pick up the new issue on next week's podcast. Oh, and also, if you do want to add a question or chat to us or whatever, www.facebook.com/MetalHammerReaders, of course. Love to hear from you. Next week, we talked about the new Iron Maiden show, and I'm going to see it.
Yeah,
I'm going to Stockholm tomorrow. As this podcast goes out tomorrow, I'll be in Stockholm seeing the brand new Iron Maiden show. I'll have a special exclusive review of it next week on this very podcast. Killswitch Engage supporting as well. We didn't even mention that.
Not a bad night out.
Just a bit excited. And we will also be running through the download lineup. It's download next week.
Shit.
That's
a thing, guys.
That's quick.
Holy shit. So we'll be picking out some of the best bands to watch. You can guarantee
we're definitely prepared for download. We are definitely prepared.
We've definitely got all our stuff we need. Oh, God. Please don't rain. Anyway, I'll basically be spending half an hour talking about why Guns N' Roses are amazing, and then Ellen Luke will pick out other bands. So yeah, join us then.
Tune in for that.
Don't forget to rate and subscribe us on iTunes and Acast, and we will see you next week. Look after yourselves. Stay metal.
Bye.
Bye.